March is a magical time of year in the garden, with plants shooting out of the ground and cherry trees ready to burst with blossom. They're certainly very beautiful, but trees are also absolutely essential when it comes to maintaining a healthy environment. They produce oxygen, absorb CO2, protect soil, prevent flooding, store and recycle nutrients, and provide a vital raw material. So it comes as quite a shock to hear the latest news from scientists that trees in the city could spell serious trouble, that they're bad for air quality and actually pose a threat to human health. Could this be true? Are you serious? Really? Well, to find out more, I headed to University College Cork, where I caught up with Professor John O'Halloran, Chair of Zoology at the School of Biological, Earth and Environmental Sciences, and his colleague, Professor John Wenger, an atmospheric chemist at UCC who specialises in air quality research.
I'm John Wenger from the chemistry department at UCC. I'm a professor in chemistry, and we do research in the area of atmospheric chemistry, looking at chemistry that occurs in air related to air quality and climate.
John, we're standing in the President's Garden, University College Cork. The grass is kind of long here. Normally this time of year this grass would be cut, and it'd be a fantastic smell of freshly cut grass. I think people wait for that first smell of the year, right, that freshly cut grass. But it's been a really cold and wet winter. But clearly that smell that we all associate with, is that actually chemicals?
It is indeed. Plants and vegetation all emit different types of chemicals, and sometimes don't smell them so much. But when we have cut grass, we have emissions of a specific type of chemical that we can obviously smell and recognise. All trees and plants emit a whole range of chemicals, which are called volatile organic compounds. And these are the things that give it the smell. These typically consist of hundreds of individual chemicals, and that one or two of these will have a very specific smell. So, for example, we know the smell of pine trees. Well, the chemical that gives us that smell is called pinene. You know, the smell that might come from citrus trees. And that is a chemical we call limonene. And when we cut grass, for example, the emissions from grass actually change. So we have a big switch. It really is a result of the plants responding to the stress of having their leaves cut. So whereas the emissions of certain compounds change, the result is that we get these highly volatile, strong odours that are emitted.
And John, some of us kind of like smells, you know. It's just daffodil day has just passed, and people put daffodils up and they can smell daffodils. I think we can all say people put their faces into roses. Right. Some people like the smell of tires. You know, what's all this about? I mean, obviously they're all chemicals, and presumably some of them are harmful.
Some of them are. I mean, obviously we have lots of natural emissions from flowers and trees and plants and so on. I mean, we can't do much about those, and of course we like those. I mean, they help us. They give us memories about things. I mean, as you say, that you might have smells that trigger memories, and that can be very nice. Some smells are not so nice, so mainly the emissions that are man-made. So, for example, vehicle exhaust contains lots of a cocktail of chemicals, really, that contain volatile organic compounds, but also particles, which are not good for your health. So we need to be careful about what we smell out there, you know?
So volatile, that means they kind of evaporate up into the air, and are they suspended in the air? We don't see these things, do we?
You don't see these things. They're like molecules, tiny molecules in the air. We don't see them. Maybe you can see the particles that are produced from vehicle exhaust and so on, but they're much larger than the molecules. The molecules are invisible to the eye, but they obviously have an effect on us because we can smell them. We have sensors in our nose that trigger a reaction in our brain, and we recognise that's the smell of pine, or that's the smell of cut grass.
It's fantastic when you mention pine. I lived in the United States, and one of the areas he's put out is a mulched area, which was mulched with pine. And when you mentioned pine to me there a few minutes ago, it brought me straight back to that sense of place. Smell does bring us to a sense of place, doesn't it?
It is, and it's an important thing for us. And, you know, if we're living and working in towns and cities, then maybe we should think about changing our environment to make it a bit more like that, you know?
There's a whole range of chemicals, natural chemicals, man-made chemicals. Is there some function in the natural chemicals?
Yes, so the release of chemicals from plants is really a response to a stress. So, for example, if the plants are subject to heat or drought conditions, then they change their biochemistry in their cells, in the plant structure, and the result is these emissions. So sometimes emissions actually occur as a result of stress, like having leaves cut or grass cut. That's the smell of cut grass. It's a response to the stress. You know, for example, if you take a leaf, you can't smell it very much. Mm. But if you then rip up the leaf, you get the smell much more. Okay, because you put the plant under stress and it gives out more emissions. So one of the concerns that people have is in a changing climate where the temperature gets hot, or we have more extreme hot events, that we're going to get more emissions.
But what's fantastic, you know, when you mentioned about squashing up that leaf there, we have a professor here, Matthias Gouten, who brings students into the field. And one of the ways he identifies certain plants, he gets students, he actually breaks up the leaf, and he suddenly that aroma comes bursting out of it. It's fantastic, isn't it?
Yeah. It is. Of course, that's a completely natural source of emissions that go into the air. But we need to think about how these emissions kind of interact with the man-made emissions. And I think that's where we can get problems, and where natural emissions can actually cause air quality problems.
So the man-made ones then, John, tell us a little bit about those, what they are and where they come from.
Most of the man-made emissions are actually from combustion, burn of fuels, fossil fuels. I nearly said sausage fuels, but fossil fuels. And so obviously vehicle exhaust is a major source in urban environments. So we burn hydrocarbons in air,
yeah,
which contains nitrogen and oxygen. We get nitrogen oxide, okay? We get obviously carbon dioxide, but that doesn't have a smell, or there's water, nor there's even carbon monoxide. But it's nitrogen oxides and the volatile smell, the volatile organics, and particles are really emitted from these processes.
So what we've talked about so far, then we're talking about plants emitting volatiles, and then we're naturally mixing them. And when the two come together, so trees interacting with volatiles that are released by humans, you know, what does that impact on humans, if at all?
Well, we get chemistry occurring, and this is what we've been studying in the laboratory here in UCC. We look at the interaction of these volatile organic compounds with the nitrogen oxides that are emitted from vehicle exhaust and so on. And it turns out that the chemistry of this process causes the formation of ozone, which is a secondary pollutant, and also other particles. It gives us the haze that you might see in the sky over a summer's day.
Mm.
So this chemistry occurs in air. We have gas molecules. It forms ozone, and it also gives us particles. And there is some concern about that, because obviously ozone, as we know, is an air pollutant. It can damage the lungs. It can irritate the respiratory tract, and you know, really have problems for people with asthma, for example.
So I'm just trying to connect the two then. So we've got trees and plants which photosynthesize, or gases going in and out. How do they interact with the chemists? Do they scavenge it out of the air, or is it the particles landing on the surface, or a combination of both perhaps?
Okay. There are two things, actually, you're right, because if we have trees and plants in an urban environment, they actually work to absorb some of the air pollution,
okay,
some of the nitrogen oxides, some of the particles. That's just by simply hitting the surface of the leaves and so on. They get deposited. So having trees in an urban environment is actually quite good in that respect, because it removes pollutants. One of the things that has come to light through recent research is that the emissions now, these organic compounds that are emitted from the trees, actually can also affect air quality, but in a negative way.
Mm.
And so we need to think carefully about the possible offset of the benefits of having trees in an urban environment with the negative effect of them being a source of volatile organic compounds, and this gives rise to air pollutants.
Okay, so across the world, we're greening the world. We're trying to put in greenways and make places look nice and also feel good for people. But obviously you're saying now there may be some questions about the species and what happens when you put those in there. And I'm interested in that. There's two things happening, as I understand. One is the plants themselves are emitting compounds, and then the interaction then between human-induced compounds connecting with the plants, and maybe the collision between those two chemistries is probably very interesting.
That's right. So it's a major research topic that we're dealing with, not just in UCC, but it's around the world. It's relevant for everybody, this sort of chemistry that affects air quality and even climate. So we're looking at the emissions from individual species and how they interact with nitrogen oxides, and we can work out which sort of trees, based upon their emissions, okay, because we have different smells from different trees, so we have different chemical signatures from different trees, and we can work out which trees are going to react with the man-made emissions to reduce more pollution or less pollution. And so we have an idea of which trees would be more beneficial to plant in an urban environment, and we should obviously inform the urban planners about this and make sure that this is a factor taken into account when they're planning any kind of greening aspect of the urban.
Instinctively then we'd say we'd plant native species in a habitat, so whatever's native to that region. Would that follow on naturally in the chemistry of that system?
Well, I think it would, obviously. I mean, it's not just the chemistry of the system. Obviously, when it's about native species, you're talking about how they support the local natural biodiversity, the birds, insects and mammals and so on. So we need to look at the big picture. This is just one factor that isn't really included very much at the moment. I mean, if you're looking at urban greening, you might also have practical aspects about maintenance of plants and trees and shrubs. There's many factors there, and urban planners we're just saying that they need to factor this into their decision-making process.
But I'm wondering about the native species. If you take a native species, put it where it always was, but
then you introduce a road and you introduce emissions from cars that were never there. Right. Maybe the native species is the wrong species to have there. Maybe you got to bring somebody in from abroad who's used to dealing with it. The plains, for example, I'm thinking of.
You're right. And I think you can't have too much of a good thing, because if you suddenly decide to put a pine forest or an oak forest in the middle of Dublin or something, then I think you could have a negative effect. What you're doing there is you're really changing the natural air composition really very much one direction, and this could have a negative impact. So essentially what we have found out from our research is that certain trees, whilst also having the positive effect of trapping pollutants, their emissions are not so reactive, so they don't produce so much pollution. So these trees are things like pine, like silver birch and larch, whereas other trees like oak and poplar especially actually cause a lot of emissions of volatiles, which when interacted with the man-made emissions cause these ozone and particle secondary pollution. So we have an idea in terms of which trees would be better in an urban environment.
Is it dangerous to have a tree in your garden? Is the first question I'm asking. Maybe the pylon wasn't the problem after all. You know, people used to think the pylons were the problem.
Of course it's not. Of course
it's not. Okay, good.
I mean, we should be worried about nature in that respect.
But how do you go about sussing out what's in the air? How do you do it? What do you do in the lab? Do you go on location? What way is it done?
That's what we do. So we use very sophisticated instruments, which are basically like electronic noses. Yeah. So we have instruments, things like mass spectrometers, and that can detect the hundreds of compounds. It's a very complex situation, you know. I mean, a tree could emit hundreds of individual chemical species, right? Mm-hmm. And we can actually get that chemical signature with some very state-of-the-art instrumentation.
Okay. What I find fantastic about this conversation is that we know that salmon, for example, I'm bringing it into the water for a minute now, but salmon, when they're migrating up rivers, each salmon goes to a unique river. It's based on their nose, inverted commas, that the salmon actually is tracking the chemical composition of the water that's unique to that. There's some recent research to show the same thing happens for birds, actually. And what's really interesting, when we looked at the genome of chickens, people were absolutely astonished to discover that birds can actually smell. We never knew birds could smell. And we now know that pigeons, for example, in their migration, actually down for the last 400 metres, use smell to locate places in the urban environment. So this is a really interesting biological consequence of some of the kind of chemicals you're talking about, with that nose, in this case, the bird's nose, which is really interesting.
And we know that certain plants, I mean, I'm sure you know about this more than me, John, but we know that certain plants, if they are damaged in some kind of way, maybe, for example, by herbivores chewing on the leaves or something, then their emissions will change as a signal. Mm. So chemical emissions are used as a signal to say, hey, go away.
Natural warfare, isn't it?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. It's a natural scent that could be off-putting to a certain species, and then it's just like a defensive mechanism. And back to how we measure, I mean, when we do measurements in the field, we get the chemical profiles of all the different plants. And to understand how these can affect the atmosphere and air quality, we need to go to the lab, because it's a very complex situation out in the real atmosphere. We have lots of other interfering emissions. But if we go to the lab, we can work under controlled conditions. So in UCC here, we have what we call an atmospheric simulation chamber, where we can mimic the chemistry that occurs in air. So we take emissions from different sources, in this case, it's plants. We put them into our chamber. We then can mix them with nitrogen oxides and man-made pollutants, and then we can follow the chemistry in the lab. So we mimic the conditions with a large reactor, with air, with lights to mimic sunlight and so on. And then we can look at how much ozone is formed from emissions from one tree, how much pollution is formed from one tree. And that's how we worked out this information.
You've mentioned ozone a few times, John, and I think when most of us hear the word ozone, we think of climate change, we think of the ozone layer. What's the connection between what you've just described, ozone in an urban environment, and then actually the climate change effect?
Yeah, I think over the decades, we've come to realise that there are quite a few complex issues associated with ozone, and sometimes it's hard to explain, but in a kind of a simple way, there are two stories with ozone. We've all heard about the ozone layer, and this is a layer of ozone above our heads. It's a naturally occurring phenomenon. It's ozone in the upper atmosphere between 15 and 40 kilometres above our heads, so it's above where aircraft fly, but it's a very important function in the Earth system, because ozone is generated naturally from ultraviolet light being absorbed by oxygen. This makes ozone. The ozone in turn also absorbs a very large amount of ultraviolet light, and this results in a natural filter of this quite energetic, damaging UV radiation. We all know that sunlight can give us a tan or sunburn. If we didn't have the ozone layer, we'd be fried. And this, not just us, of course, but the natural world would be affected greatly. Ultraviolet light can actually break down DNA. It's that energetic. So that's the situation with ozone in the stratosphere. It's a good thing it's our natural filter. We don't want to destroy it with CFCs and so on. So that's why there's measures in place to protect chlorofluorocarbons that were used in the old spray cans and so on. Yeah. They damage the ozone layer. So we've put measures in place to limit damage to the ozone layer, and I think things are looking well in that respect. What we're concerned about as well, though, is ozone at ground level. Mm. So where we're living, the air that we breathe. And here ozone is produced, but it's produced from nitrogen oxides, the man-made pollutants that I was talking about that are emitted from vehicle exhausts and so on. And nitrogen oxides get converted to ozone, and the volatile organic compounds, whether man-made or from plants, they accelerate that ozone formation. And so that's the link. And ozone at ground level, unfortunately, has an impact on our health. It can irritate the lungs, okay? So people with respiratory problems like asthma can be affected by this. And so it's obviously an air pollutant, and we need to make sure that we limit emissions of nitrogen oxides and also volatile organic compounds. So we need to really try to manage our environment to minimise the effect on air pollution.
So you're collecting samples across the country, John, and we know that in 1990, if I'm correct, there was a ban on bituminous coal burning, particularly in Dublin, and then it went around the rest of the country. Right. So air quality is probably quite good. Am I right in that? We've lessened those volatiles as you described from burning fossil fuels.
I think most people would regard the air quality in Ireland has been good. It's certainly the best it's ever been. One of the measures to improve air quality was the ban on smoky coal, bituminous coal, and that occurred in 1990. And that's extended to many cities and towns around the country. But as highlighted in the news only 1 year ago, it's not a nationwide ban.
Okay, not nationwide.
Not nationwide. So the ban is in place for towns larger than 15,000 population. So if you live in a town that's smaller than that, there's no ban on smoky coal. You can burn this along with coal, peat and wood. And we've just performed an EPA-sponsored research project called Sapphire, where we've actually gone around to various small towns in Ireland where the ban is not in place. And what we find is that during winter months, when people are burning coal, not just coal, but peat and wood, what we find is that the air quality, in terms of particle pollution, is worse than it is in the centre of Dublin, for example. So the small towns have a winter air pollution problem.
So and the winter obviously exacerbates for two reasons. One, people are burning.
Right.
But then you get that cold, what's called, I think, thermal inversion, am I right in that? You get a trapping of some of the air actually over the towns and villages.
That's right.
Right?
That's right. So you take a balloon outside, it will rise, okay, because it's like the hot air balloon idea, yeah. Okay? So basically that air will rise, but to the point, when there's a temperature inversion where the temperature of the air actually is warmer than the air below it, you get a lid on the atmosphere. Mm. This is called the thermal inversion, and this traps pollutants. It's a lower level. The thermal inversion can be a few hundred metres high, but in winter months it comes down much lower. Mm. And so it really helps to concentrate any pollutants that are produced. That combined with the kind of cold, still winter nights that we often get means that we get little dispersion. And so those are the conditions that are ripe for what we call a winter smog sort of pollution episode.
But lucky in Ireland, because we've lots of wind, so we get a lot of that blown away, don't we, I guess, don't we?
We do, but obviously there are times of the year when we have the weather conditions are ripe for that, where we have very little wind and little dispersion. So we need to take care about what we do during those periods.
And looking across the globe then, last winter, we heard earlier this year, actually, we've heard from Beijing, for example, that there were red zone air quality. We don't have those in Europe, I don't think, do we?
No, we don't. We did once upon a time. I mean, if you go back to the 1950s London smogs, and even the smogs from Dublin in the 1980s, which actually led to the ban on smoky coal. But we don't reach those levels anymore. I mean, there has been a huge effort to improve air quality. EU legislation is in place to minimise emissions, and there are target levels for different pollutants. Now, what research has also shown us, though, is that it's not just good enough to reach those levels, which, by the way, are much better than Beijing. I mean, by a factor of 10.
Wow.
I mean, I wouldn't really go out walking, let alone running in the air in Beijing. But
he did. I went walking, certainly. Wasn't running.
I think that we need to continuously strive to reduce emissions to improve our air quality. What research has shown is that exposure to even small amounts of air pollution or particles in the air can have a health effect.
What really surprised me though, and Beijing and Shanghai, but Beijing is about an hour and a half flight from Shanghai, and being in Shanghai at night, looking out and seeing the stars, that really surprised me, because we have this kind of image that is murky and dirty in some parts, but I was amazed, and I remember flying back that night to Cork and seeing the moon, and I know it sounds weird, it is the same moon, but actually seeing it in Beijing or in Shanghai and seeing it there was really quite weird, but actually with the clarity of the air, it surprised me actually.
Well, it can happen. I mean, once you get the weather change, it can clear the pollution out, and so rain also clears the pollution out as well. So, but we need to control these periods. I mean, it's you may even have heard of situations in London and Paris over the last year or two where air quality has exceeded limits, and so we still need to make sure that we need to take care of our emissions and make sure that we don't.
And your research, John, has been going on. What surprised you most? What has surprised you looking at that chemistry? You've run the mass spec and you get the results. What jumped out and said, wow, I didn't expect that?
The thing that surprised most of the people in the atmospheric chemistry community is that the emissions from plants and trees cause ozone formation and aerosol formation in the atmosphere. And this has a huge effect on climate. 90% of these volatile organic emissions on a global basis come from plants and trees. This really goes a long way to controlling atmospheric composition, the chemicals that are in the air, local air quality, but also regional and global climate. So it's the emissions from plants that have a big effect. And what research is showing now is how those emissions interact with the man-made emissions, like nitrogen oxides, to exacerbate air quality problems. And it really shows how air quality and climate are really linked.
Can I ask you one really tricky question, John? Obviously, we're in a technological age, and I've often talked about the notion of smell-o-vision. In other words, you have television where you can see and you can hear.
Yeah.
Wouldn't it be fantastic, maybe not always, that you could smell what you see? So you would stimulate parts of the brain. So you wear a hat, if you like, and when you get those images, you would stimulate parts of the brain. I mean, obviously the brain functions in smells, and there are different parts of the brain. Is that a daft idea?
I just tune into the fried breakfast channel every single time. I mean, we have very sensitive noses. I mean, and you know, one of the examples of where we've evolved to pick up smells is that we can smell gone off food.
Yeah.
You know, and we're exceptionally sensitive to these sorts of compounds because it's a protective mechanism for our health. We're saying that food is bad, I'm not eating that.
I have a bunch of daffodils. Derek, you want to smell it all? You can actually smell it.
Very nice, yeah.
Can we characterize that? I mean, do we know what that characteristic smell is?
With a modern mass spectrometer, you could pick up several hundred individual compounds from that.
Wow.
Maybe 5 or 10 of those would give its characteristic smell. And so, you know, understanding how the observable that we have is the smell, but we break it down into individual molecules that we can't even see.
Fantastic.
And then each of those have a different effect on us, and also, it turns out, the atmosphere. And I think we need to find out more.
I'm thinking, as I leave you here now today in Cork, that there should be an emissions card in every garden centre for the trees you should and shouldn't plant in your back garden and the likely effect on the community.
That'll keep us busy for a few decades, I think, Derek.
That's where it's going. If you're doing all the research and you're finding out all this kind of stuff and you're going to be saying to local authorities, okay, if you're building a roadway there, these are perhaps the trees you should be planting that are best going to negate the emissions that are coming out of the cars and the vehicles that are using the road. Presumably, there has to be a means to an end. You have to be finding out this stuff. You have to do something with it. So.
Yeah. We're working on that. I mean, that's part of the recent research that many groups, not just us, but groups around Europe and the world have been performing, is characterising the emissions from plants and then looking at their impact on air quality and climate. It's, you can imagine the number of plants and trees that are out there, the large number of chemicals. It's a project that will last forever.